Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable Chief Justice David Gilbertson presiding, is now in session.
Please be seated. The first case for oral argument this morning is Patrick Bennett, appellant, versus Douglas Howard, appellee. For the appellant, we have Ms. Heather Lammers-Bogard, an attorney from Rapid City. And for the appellee, we have Mr. Adam Bradsky, an attorney also from Rapid City. Ms. Lammers-Bogard, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel, and law clerks, thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. This case arises from an unfortunate yet undisputed set of facts. My client, Mr. Raymond Bennett, was visiting the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally in 2012. On August 5th of 2012, Mr. Bennett was traveling east on Highway 44 near Rapid City on his motorcycle, failed to negotiate a curve, and unfortunately went off the road and was killed instantly. There is no dispute that Mr. Bennett was negligent, causing his own death. There's also no dispute that both Mr. Bennett and his motorcycle, upon rest, were off the road and in the ditch, therefore not causing any obstruction on the roadway. The timing of what occurred next is significant. Mr. Bennett's accident occurred at approximately 3 p.m. At 3:23, Trooper Dan Bender was the first officer to arrive on the scene. During the next 8 minutes, four additional officers arrived on scene, and according to the testimony of Trooper Ryback, they were responsible for securing the scene, keeping it safe, making sure that traffic was continuing to flow. By the time that Trooper Ryback arrived at the scene, it was 4 p.m., and at that point, Mr. Bennett's body had already been removed. At that point, his motorcycle was still there in the process of the tow truck driver removing the same. Traffic, without question, was flowing in both directions when Trooper Ryback was there to investigate the scene, and of course his duty was also to map the scene and the area. As to warnings, it's undisputed that to the east of the accident site, there was a highway patrol vehicle that was warning oncoming traffic that there had been an accident site ahead. It's also undisputed that to the west of the accident, there was no such law enforcement vehicle or other warning indicating that an accident had occurred ahead. It's undisputed, however, that between the time of the accident of Mr. Bennett at 3 p.m. and the time of Mr. Howard's accident, no other accidents occurred. Traffic was moving freely. At approximately 4:39 p.m., Trooper Ryback was again mapping the scene, and he heard braking of a motorcycle, looked up, and saw Mr. Howard attempting to stop his vehicle, but having to lay the bike down and suffered injuries. Mr. Howard's testimony is the same. He was traveling the same direction as Mr. Bennett. He was going east on Highway 44. He was going to negotiate the same curve, came around the curve. He indicated there was no law enforcement vehicle to indicate there had been an accident, came around the curve, saw a motorhome pulling a trailer in his lane of traffic, attempted to brake his motorcycle, was unable to do so, laid it down, and was injured. Mr. Howard, in his deposition, admitted that he placed the fault on the highway patrol for the accident in not warning him that there had been an accident and traffic was slow. He also admitted in his deposition that Mr. Bennett had no control over how the accident was controlled. Sorry, how the scene was controlled. Mr. Howard even sued the highway patrol for having caused his injuries and failing to maintain the fatal accident scene. The highway patrol filed a motion to dismiss, and in response to that, Mr. Howard again argued that the highway patrol created the danger that caused his injuries. Although the Seventh Circuit denied the motion to dismiss, Mr. Howard on his own dismissed the case and chose instead to proceed against the estate of my client, Mr. Bennett, which is, of course, what brings us here today. Following discovery on behalf of the estate, we filed a motion for summary judgment. And based on the undisputed facts and settled South Dakota law, summary judgment should have been granted in favor of Mr. Bennett. First, as to the undisputed facts, you will note that in Mr. Howard's brief, there is no reference whatsoever to there being any dispute as to material fact. As to settled law, first, this court can review this case de novo because, of course, we're addressing the question of duty, which is a question of law. And based on those undisputed facts, there's no question that Mr. Bennett had no duty in this case. We need only look truly to one South Dakota Supreme Court case to determine that there was no duty, and of course that's the Zerfus case that was decided in 2015, not long ago. And I know I don't need to recite the facts to you all, but of course that involved the deer carcass in the road. The first driver is driving along, hits a deer, leaves the carcass in the road, and continues on. Other drivers pass through and are able to pass without any interference from the carcass. A subsequent driver is trying to avoid the carcass, cannot do so, crosses the median, and then ends up in an accident on the opposite side of the interstate. This court specifically held there was no duty by that first driver to the injured party. This court looked to foreseeability and held the existence, scope, and range of duty depends on the foreseeability of the risk of harm. And to determine foreseeability, this court said, you ask the question, what would a reasonable person anticipate? And of course, this court held in Zerfus that it is reasonable for a person to anticipate that someone will be able to drive safely and carefully and avoid that carcass. And in fact, there was evidence that other drivers had passed through the same area of the interstate and in fact were able to avoid the carcass. The court looked to the original wrongdoer's acts and said, yes, there is a duty, as we all have, to exercise reasonable care, but that does not necessarily translate into any legal duty. This court said to hold otherwise would be strict liability, meaning that every driver in every accident would be required to ensure the safety of every other driver that subsequently comes upon an accident.
You know, Zerfus was a duty case, but I kind of wonder whether this isn't really a causation case, not a duty case. Zerfus, we were deciding generally whether motorists in general have a duty to stop, and that's really not the question, whether your client had a duty to do something. The question is, was the Highway Patrol, as a matter of law, did they cause the accident by their failure to warn, manage the scene? So it may not matter because foreseeability is involved in both, but what's your view on that?
And you're correct, Your Honor, but our position is that first, there is no duty. But then we would go on to the next to say, even if there is some duty, the court believes there's any duty on behalf of Mr. Bennett, then it's certainly shifted to the Highway Patrol under the Braun case. But before I get to the Braun case, again, I think it goes to foreseeability and what my client could or could not have anticipated. And of course, it's even more persuasive than Zerfus because in this case, my client is deceased and he can't anticipate anything. He's off the road. His bike is also off the road. He's not causing any obstruction. But over an hour and a half passed between the two accidents, and there was undisputably heavy rally traffic during that time. Others are freely passing through, so it would be reasonable for a person to anticipate that Mr. Howard could have stopped just as any other vehicle stopped as they're passing through. And therefore, Mr. Bennett could not foresee the risk of harm and had no duty. So it's our position under Zerfus alone, this court should reverse the trial court and enter judgment as a matter of law in favor of Mr. Bennett. But again, if this court believes there is some duty on behalf of Mr. Bennett, the Braun case would be controlling in that the duty shifted. In the Braun case, and of course, I don't, again, need to recite the facts, but in that case, it involved a road that had washed out. The township put up a sign warning that the road was closed. A person or persons knocked down the sign, and subsequent to that, the township reinstalled the sign, however, less conspicuously, and a driver came upon the road and did not see the sign, drove onto the road, and then, of course, suffered injury. And this court determined in 2002, also addressing a motion for summary judgment, that as a matter of law, the township's actions were an intervening, superseding cause, relieving the wrongdoers, the people who had tore down the sign, of any liability. And again, this court had held that it's superseding when, because of a lapse of time or any other reason, the duty shifts. And the court, it's significant, also noted that the township had a statutory duty to put up those warning signs. And it's no different in this case where the Highway Patrol has a statutory duty to warn traffic that it may be a slow accident area.
You know, I didn't see a statute that talked about warning. Maybe there's more generalized language is what I recall.
It's general. I admit that, Your Honor. It's SDCL 31.4.14.2, generally addressing placing warnings on highways. But it's our position it's no different than the township's duty to have the requirement to place a warning on that road as well. And as far as how much time has elapsed, this court has never said there has to be a specific amount of time for the duty to shift. There has to be enough time. In this case, it's undisputed that the Highway Patrol had controlled the scene for at least an hour. And certainly that's sufficient time for any duty, if, again, the court finds there's any duty on behalf of Mr. Bennett, to have shifted to the Highway Patrol. Mr. Bennett certainly could not have foreseen that the Highway Patrol would inadequately control the scene or fail to provide safety mechanisms to other drivers. So based on two settled South Dakota Supreme Court cases, Braun and Zerfus, there's sufficient case law to overturn the trial court and enter judgment in favor of Mr. Bennett. But as always, there are other cases in other jurisdictions that might also provide guidance that have similar facts, and we cited to the Jackson case in our brief out of North Carolina. In that case, the driver fell asleep, hit a utility pole, and then law enforcement came to the scene, controlled the scene. One of the law enforcement officers was passing a truck through. That truck caught the line, which ultimately injured one of the officers at the scene. The court in that case said that the law enforcement officers had controlled the scene. It was no longer the duty of the original driver. That driver could not foresee that the officer would wave a truck through that would ultimately drag down a line. Within the Jackson case was a Williams case, also out of North Carolina, with similar facts. There was a car accident, and then law enforcement secured the scene. 20 to 45 minutes later, another vehicle comes through and actually runs over one of the officers. Again, that court said the first driver could not have foreseen that the second driver would run over the police officer and was not in control of that driver in any manner. And both of those cases resulted in judgment in favor of the defendant.
Now, if we get beyond those concepts, I'm going to ask you a question that has plagued me since law school on getting to the issue of cause and then proximate cause. And is it a legal question on proximate cause and a factual question on cause? And how does that play into the facts in this case? If we get beyond the initial duty, and then we still have to use the other concept of foreseeability with proximate cause.
In this case, we need only look to Braun. And in that case, there was an intervening cause. This court determined that there was an intervening superseding cause that can be determined as a matter of law. In this case, though, it's even more persuasive because there are no disputes as to material fact. So even if it were a fact question, this court is capable of making that determination. And that brings me to the one and only case cited by Mr. Howard, the Bauman case from the Eighth Circuit. First, that interprets Nebraska law, which does not consider foreseeability when determining duty. But it's important to note that in that case, they found for judgment as a matter of law in favor of the defendants because there was no dispute as to material fact. In that case, there was a truck that had stalled that was somewhat on the interstate. Another vehicle came upon it, hit it, caused a fire. That fire caused a traffic jam on the opposite side of the interstate. Multiple cars in that line were able to stop, except for the very last one who ends up rear-ending the last car, which caused injuries and even death. And the court held if the facts were undisputed. They didn't have to look to the foreseeability when determining duty. They simply held all those other cars were able to stop. And in that case, the negligence of the rear end, the person driving the vehicle that rear-ended the line of traffic was a superseding intervening cause. And the same would be true here. The facts are in dispute, and there's no question that there would be an intervening cause of the highway patrol, if not Mr. Howard himself, for failing to stop, like all of the others that passed through during that well over hour time frame. And also within the Bauman case, which again actually supports our position, there are multiple cases cited from various jurisdictions that I think addresses the time frame. Because the argument may be, well, there was a short amount of time, whereas in the Braun case, there was 3 weeks. But in that case, it addressed the intervening cause by subsequently negligent drivers, and Hale versus Brown out of Kansas was 35 minutes later was the accident. Anderson versus Jones, 3 to 10 minutes later. Vanderbeek versus Clone, 1 hour later. All of those cases, the courts determined the intervening cause was the subsequently negligent driver, and the duty shifted. In sum, Mr. Howard has raised no question of material fact. He's not cited one factually similar controlling case. And under clear South Dakota law, particularly Zerfus and Braun, there's no question that there was no duty of Mr. Bennett. And if there was, it certainly shifted from Mr. Bennett to the Highway Patrol under the undisputed facts in this case. And as a result, the trial court should be reversed and Mr. Bennett should be granted judgment as a matter of law.
Curious. I'm not. Maybe I just didn't dig deep enough. This is an intermediate appeal. What's left of the? Why is this an intermediate appeal? What's left? If you lose on this, is there still a cause of action out there?
It's my understanding that if we were to lose on this appeal, that it would go to the jury, and we'd have to proceed with a jury trial.
On what issues?
On the issues of whether my client was negligent, had a duty, and breached that duty, and if any of that breach then resulted in injuries to Mr. Howard.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Bradsky, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Adam Bradsky, and I represent the appellee, Mr. Howard, in this case, and we are here to respectfully request that this court affirm the lower court's decision and remand this case for further proceedings. The main issue here is whether the allegedly negligent omissions of the South Dakota Highway Patrol were a superseding cause of Howard's injuries that would extinguish Bennett's undisputed liability. First, I will address the judicial estoppel question, and then I will get into the question about whether or not Bennett had a duty in the first place, and then I will get into the superseding cause analysis. Regarding judicial estoppel means that where a party has successfully asserted a prior inconsistent position, they will be held to that prior inconsistent position in future litigation. And the case at issue here is the Howard v. Bender et al. Case. And in that case, Bender had made a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. And the position that Howard asserted was that primarily there was further, and In order for it to be a successful assertion, the there would have had to have been a judicial adoption of that position. And the only successfully asserted position was that further discovery was needed before there could be a decision on whether or not the Highway Patrol had a duty in that case. So there was no successfully asserted position that is inconsistent with what we are claiming in this case at bar. Additionally, in any event, we're alleging here that Bennett's negligence, if any, was a proximate cause. And in Howard v. Bender, it was the same thing, simply that Bender's negligence was a proximate cause. And that's not inconsistent with what we're claiming today.
How was that suit resolved?
Ultimately, we voluntarily dismissed that action without prejudice to explore this Bennett case.
Was it settled?
No, Your Honor. So moving on to the question about whether or not Bennett had a duty in the first place, the appellant points to the Zerfus case. And in that case, the court was trying to decide whether or not to impose a duty on an unidentified motorist who left a deer carcass in the lane of travel. And in refusing to impose the duty, this court noted that to do so would impose strict liability on all drivers post-impact with wild animals, and it would make drivers insurers of care of following motorists' safety. Here, Bennett's negligence is undisputed, so there is no concern that this court would be imposing a strict liability on non-negligent drivers. So moving on to the question of superseding cause, the appellant points to the Braun case. And in Braun, the court found significant the fact that there was a statutory duty on the part of the township, and more importantly, I think, was the lapse of time. Now, the appellant points to South Dakota Codified Law, Chapter 31-4-14.2, to attempt to argue that that imposes a duty on the South Dakota Highway Patrol. However, I would argue that if any agency, that imposes a duty on the Department of Transportation. Also, I just point out in the appellant's brief, they argue that the legislature intended that the whole duty with respect to public safety on a particular highway should rest with the governmental agency in charge of that highway. And as to Highway 44, they say that it is plainly vested in the state of South Dakota via SDCL 31-4-2 and therefore in the South Dakota Highway Patrol. However, that linchpin statute, 31-4-2, was repealed in 2010. So I don't believe the appellant has established that the South Dakota Highway Patrol has any statutory duty. And in any event, I think it was important that the township affirmatively acted in carrying out that statutory duty. And here we only have the allegedly negligent omissions of the South Dakota Highway Patrol that allegedly caused injury, not any affirmative acts. The appellant also points to, or regarding Braun, the other significant factor was the lapse of time. And again, in Braun, there was nearly 3 weeks had passed from the original negligence until the subsequent injury. And in this case, we have less than 2 hours. It's important to note that the condition created in Braun by the original actor's negligence became completely irrelevant in that 3 week period of time. Whereas here, the condition, which was the natural progression of events caused by Bennett's negligence, was fully operative at the time of Howard's injuries. Next, the appellant points to the non-binding case of Jackson v. Howell Motors Freight. And I think it's important to note in that case that the negligence on the part of law enforcement was active negligence in that they were waiving the truck driver through the dangerous condition, whereas here we have mere passive, allegedly negligent omissions on the part of the South Dakota Highway Patrol. Ultimately, the struggle with this question on superseding cause turns on the question of foreseeability as it relates to superseding causes, and that's why the Eighth Federal Circuit can be instructive in the case of Bowman. Now, in Bowman v. Zukov, it's true that they applied Nebraska law, but I don't think, as it relates to this, Nebraska law is all that different, because the court decided that Nebraska law says that all but the most, and all the foreseeability question is a question of fact, except for in cases where reasonable minds cannot differ. And in those instances, the question can be decided as a matter of law.
So, so follow up on that. When the highway patrol is in charge of the scene and managing the scene for an hour and a half, can reasonable people disagree about whether it's their responsibility at that point rather than the driver?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that reasonable people can disagree there, because to answer the question of whether or not the highway patrol had sufficient control so that the original actor's negligence could be cut off is a very fact-intensive question, and I believe that reasonable minds can differ on that.
On whether there's potential liability for the patrol? You think that's an open question here?
Correct, Your Honor.
That they may not be liable at all? They had no duty, or what? What are you saying?
Yes, Your Honor, I think that's an open question on whether the highway patrol could be liable. I don't think that's been established in any prior proceedings.
Well, go beyond the superseding cause issue to the proximate cause issue. Isn't there a proximate cause issue that courts can decide as a matter of law?
Well, in that case, Your Honor, I would point to what this court has reiterated on several occasions, that questions of proximate cause are for the jury in all but the rarest of cases. And I believe that this isn't one of those rare cases where you might have a superseding cause that would cut off liability.
Well, I wasn't talking about superseding. I was talking about proximate. They're different issues.
Right, Your Honor. And again, I would say that the proximate cause question should be a question for the jury in this case, because reasonable minds could differ on what was the actual cause of this accident. That's the whole thrust of our argument, is that there's so much going on in this situation that it should be for a trier of fact to determine who was the ultimate cause, or if there's multiple parties brought in the future, which ones are responsible to what extent.
But you know, I've looked or poked around a little bit on this, and I haven't found a case where whether they've analyzed either proximate cause, superseding cause, or even duty, where they've found liability in a case where the law enforcement has been managing the scene for an hour and a half after the first accident. These multiple vehicle accident cases are kind of common. There's lots of them. But I've not, have you found anything that has permitted liability in any legal context that is an hour and a half after the initial accident?
I have not, Your Honor, and that's why I think this case is unique, and it's important to realize that the inquiry here is so fact-intensive. Changing one fact just slightly can completely change the result. And again, that's why I think the approach that the court in Bowman took is instructive.
Well, is that a cause issue that is factually what causes the accident, or is it a proximate cause issue of how far legally do we allow liability to extend from chain reactions?
Well, I think this court has noted that the extent of the duty is a question of law, if that's where you're going, and I would agree with that. And again, I would point to Bowman as being instructive, because as that court said, in cases involving successive car accidents such as this one, proximate cause or the scope of the duty, because again, this court has noted the confusion between the two, has been resolved as a matter of law based on the following considerations. One, lapse of time. Two, whether the force initiated by the original wrongdoer continued in operation up to the injury. Three, whether the act of the intervener can be considered extraordinary. And four, whether the intervening act was a normal response to the situation created by the first wrongdoer.
And what are you citing? You just went through four factors. Where did they come from?
Those factors came from the court in Bowman v. Zukov, in which they cited the case Blood v. VH1 Music First.
Is that the Nebraska case?
The Nebraska case, correct. Eighth Federal Circuit applying Nebraska law. And they pulled those factors from the case Blood v. VH1 Music First, and it appears that Blood got those factors from the restatement. I believe it was the first restatement, though, not the second. However, for successive car accidents, those factors are instructive here, and if you apply those factors to the facts of this case, which again I would argue is a successive accident case, you can find that the lapse of time here is quite brief, less than 2 hours, that the force or circumstances initiated by Bennett's negligence was still in active operation up until the point of Howard's injuries, that Trooper Bender's acts of investigating and managing the scene are not extraordinary, that they're normal and ordinary in the course of conduct following such an accident, and finally, that Bender and the Highway Patrol's acts were a normal response to the situation created by Bennett's negligence. So in conclusion, again, I would urge this court to remember its language in Rumbles versus Whip when it said, when an injury occurs through the concurrent negligence of two persons and when it have not occurred in the absence of either, the negligence of both is the proximate cause of the accident and both are answerable. As this court has reiterated, questions of proximate cause are for the jury in all but the rarest of cases, and this is not one of those rare cases where there would be a superseding cause. And so the general rule from the restatement cited in Braun should apply, that the failure of a third person to act to prevent the harm to another threatened by the actor's negligent conduct is not a superseding cause of such harm. Therefore, Howard respectfully requests that this court affirm the lower court's decision and remand this case for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bradsky. Mrs. Lammers-Bogart, you have 10 minutes. To rebut.
First, with regard to the judicial estoppel argument, our point with making that argument in our brief is simply that Mr. Howard chose to blame the Highway Patrol. They're on record for blaming the Highway Patrol. They cannot now assert to you a different set of facts. And the only reason that applies in this case is due to the superseding, intervening cause. They can't blame the Highway Patrol in an earlier case and now combat that and say that there is no intervening superseding cause. The fact is, since they're blaming the Highway Patrol, they're stuck with that argument. And as a result, any duty, and again, we don't think there was any, but any duty on the part of Mr. Bennett had shifted to the Highway Patrol, and they can't escape that. Also, on the issue of negligence.
Would the effect of sovereign immunity potentially applying to the Highway Patrol affect that?
Yes, and that was actually going to be my next point, is you wouldn't even need to get to the point of whether the Highway Patrol is ultimately liable, whether they were negligent. We don't even need to get to negligence. It's a question of duty or whether that duty has shifted, whether there's an intervening cause. We cited a case in a footnote in our brief where a judge had failed to jail a drunk driver and the driver went out and got in an accident. The judge was immune. And that's fine. We don't need to get to that point. We're not opening floodgates to the Highway Patrol being sued. They don't ever have to be found liable. We look only to duty or whether that duty has shifted. And counsel also talked about active negligence versus passive negligence. First, we maintain that's a distinction without a difference. But in this case, they are stuck with, again, their prior claims that they argued in the other case, which were examples of active negligence by the Highway Patrol, where they claimed the Highway Patrol was ignoring other vehicles braking, that they were ignoring the tow truck driver telling them they needed to secure the scene, or even that they permitted the tow truck driver to be partially on the road. So again, even if you were to accept their argument, there were claims of active negligence in their first case against the Highway Patrol. Counsel said that reasonable people could not differ as to whether as to who was in control of the scene. No one else could control that scene at that point. Once Highway Patrol is there, they're in charge of that scene, and in fact, there are statutes that say if you affect or impede their ability to control the scene, then you may be liable or criminally responsible. Certainly, Mr. Bennett couldn't control the scene. His body wasn't even at the scene at the time of the second accident. Also, counsel had indicated that this case is unique. It is not unique. There are a line of cases that involve the subsequent accident type cases where they all say, all of these people in the lineup are able to safely stop. The one in the back was not able to. That's a superseding intervening cause. Line of cases to that effect. We have that here. Multiple vehicles were able to pass through that area safely and even stop in that area safely, except for Mr. Howard. But we also, in addition to that, we have the situation where the Highway Patrol is controlling the scene. There's a line of cases saying once law enforcement has controlled the scene, the duty shifts. There's no question that in this case, there is no duty on behalf of Mr. Bennett, and if there were, it certainly would have shifted to the Highway Patrol, relieving Mr. Bennett of any liability. And again, we ask that the trial court be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you. We are also on the internet in these oral arguments, so we run on the hour. So we will be in recess until 11 o'clock and then start the next case. We're in recess.